始めよう。ロードするぞ。
All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and are you ready for some degeneracy? Because it's Grim's Hentai Corner, and we're back with Maggot Baits, as requested. The more you guys request stuff, the more I'm gonna go ahead and do it. So, it makes my job a lot easier. People say, hey, we want this, then I'll do that. Of course, there are some times where I want a break, and that's where I'll do, like, comics and stuff like that. Comics are going to be done this week, too, but we are definitely doing some hentai, because we haven't done hentai in a little bit. So, at least not to my liking. So, we're going to do more of that. Where am I? She came in the darkness. She came to in darkness, rather. She was in a cramped space, too narrow to move, much let alone rise. Yeah, let's try that again. She was in a cramped space, too narrow to move much, let alone rise. Wilma was laying on her side like an infant maturing in the womb. Her situation was evident, but comprehension meant fear. She was trapped in these dark confines. The cool touch against her skin was metal, but judging from the sound of her nails against it, it wasn't that thick. Wilma thought about trying to escape, but she realized her body was weakened and unable to move. She'd been robbed of her strength. Panic and despair rose within her. Voices buzzed outside, sounding like the breath and conversations of a crowd filled with vulgar anticipation. The moment she began to notice her surroundings, stabbing pain pricked at her skin. It centered around contact with the metal bar, with the metal below her. It's hot? It's heat! She was trapped inside of a cramped metal frame with a sudden realization that the lower portion was growing hotter. The temperature continually grew hotter until she started to burn. She was almost certain the outsiders had lit a fire under her. This couldn't be! Phalaris' bull? Her knowledge called forth the worst possible association. The true form of the trap she found herself inside, the shape of the metal walls around Wilma proved her guess correct. No way! No! Wilma moved to her inhabited body, desperately trying to struggle inside the metal bowl, because she knew what fate awaited those trapped inside. Wilma had read it in a book. In ancient times, there was a device used for torture and execution known as Phalaris' bowl. A person was shoved in the metal bowl, flames were lit beneath it, and the execution device provided a show for others as the one inside writhed in agony as they burned to death. It was said the first man it was tested on was its own inventor, and the last to be burned to death in it was the king who ordered its creation. Still, all of that meant nothing to Wilma at that moment. Stop it! I'm a witch! As a witch, Wilma couldn't die, even if her entire body was burned. She would suffer far more agony than any human, unable to die, only to suffer even further. Don't! No! Let me out of here! Please! Someone save me! Wilma pounded on the frame and shouted, but all she heard outside was the banter and vulgar laughs of men. Meanwhile, the burns continued to spread over Wilma's body. It hurts! My hair! Wilma could hear crackling in her ear. Her hair began to sputter and smoke under the intense heat, searing onto the flame. Onto the frame, rather. Fumes filled the inside of the metal bowl, along with the smell of burnt hair. Even my skin! She started hearing the roar of a fire. Thick white smoke billowed from the bowl. The bottom of her body was truly burning. Her flesh oozed just like animal meat while cooking, and her once pretty skin began to turn dark red. The smoky smell of her own fat burning filled the metal bowl. No, 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 help me! Wilma was already half mad from the tremendous pain, permeating smoke and the smells prickling her nose. The skin on her palms and fingers burned and blistered, as she pounded on the metal shell, pain shooting through her as it sheared off. That alone wasn't enough to stop her hammering, though. She could imagine how great the fierce pain assailing her would become, and how long it would drag on. All the skin on her body blistered and peeled away, even the flesh underneath charred under the powerful heat. Her hair burnt, and even her scalp melted, revealing her skull. However, even as her brain began to boil, Loba was still alive. Her immortal body wouldn't allow her to die, forcing her to endure the endlessly burning inferno. She couldn't even imagine that suffering. Her mind likely wouldn't be able to endure it either. No, don't. Please help me. You're outside, aren't you? I'll do anything. I'll do anything. She coughed from the smoke, still pleading with those watching outside. She thought she could do anything if it meant getting out of there. Her self-respect was gone from her mind. The only responses were scoffs and insults. She couldn't understand their words, but she could clearly sense the waves of malice through the iron shell. No way! Her entire body was burning. Blisters popped across her skin and blood poured out of her sealed blood vessels. Soon even her blisters began to melt. Intense signals of pain tore through her haphazardly. Let me out! Her throat began to burn as she continued screaming, lungs broiling from the burnt air. Loma no longer had the strength to break through these iron panels. She could only beg for salvation from an outside, but words now failed to leave her mouth. The more she tried to cry out, the more she exacerbated the burns in her throat, causing her to cough. Loma was choking on the smoke of her own body burning. Why? It would have been easier if she could lose consciousness from suffocation, but the intense pain of being burned alive refused her any peace. An air hole in this metal bowl allowed her to breathe, stopping her from passing out from smoke-induced hypoxia. Help me! She howled like a beast, a violent, unmatched death knell one would never imagine, judging from her usual intelligent composure. In contrast, the world outside the iron was once again filled with cheers and excitement. She didn't even have energy left to respond to those outside. Her burning body was stuck to the metal, and when she thrashed, her skin audibly ripped and peeled away, burned again, and ripped once more. How many times did that cycle repeated? Even her tears evaporated in a tremendously painful instant. The fluid in her eyeballs was beginning to leak as well. Her burnt and blistered face could hardly be called a woman's anymore. Worse, it was already losing its human shape. Somebody, anybody, just please help me. Those were the only thoughts racing through Wilma's head as she suffered. That was when she heard the roar of the spreading fire. Before she knew it, the iron bowl was tinged deep red. Wilma heard that sound. Soon it was joined by an indescribably unpleasant odor. Wilma's hair went up in a blaze. The temperature inside climbed too high, causing her hair to finally combust. The blaze tore through Wilma's hair like a hungry beast boiling the scalp beneath it. Wilma's long, lusciously dark hair turned to ash and released a foul odor. Wilma thrashed in her narrow confines, howling with all her might, disregarding her burnt legs and the pain of her lips burning, sticking, and peeling away. Wilma desperately begged for death with her hoarse voice. That was the only hope she had. Her skin blistered and burned away, and even the flesh beneath charred black. The enormous burns spread inside her body as well as severely damaging her mouth, throat, esophagus, and lungs. Even her appearance became hideous. Death would have been a release, and she longed for it to come quick. A new change began to occur with Loma's body as she suffered in despair. It began to swell up like a balloon, taking in air. She was under so much intense pain that she couldn't even recognize what was happening in her own body. Her body unevenly expanded like mochi, bursting and popping. Her white fat, melted by the heat, oozed out of the broken pustules. Her body was already heated to the point where subcutaneous fat had melted. The fire that had spread to her face had sputtered out, but the damage was so bad that bones were exposed in places. The area around her eyes had especially suffered from the heat, and her eyeballs had long melted away. Loma was unable to sense all but a faint light, but as a witch, she was still unable to die. The membranes inside her mouth were fused together. Her tongue was burnt to a pitch black lump of ash. She could no longer speak, and she could barely even cough or moan, nothing more. Wilma was unable to speak and covered in blisters. Not a shred of her former beauty remained. She was nothing more than a swollen lump of burnt flesh, something one could hardly call human. The insides of her skull were on the verge of boiling, and Wilma's consciousness was constantly wavering. Her only saving grace was that when her consciousness did return, it was so vague that it wasn't much different from being unconscious. All her turbid mind could recognize was a dull pain reminding her that she still lived. Why was she still alive? Why hadn't she died yet? Because she's a witch. Then what are witches? The fiery heat invaded her thoughts as well, setting her thoughts on loop. Her mind was starting to break down. Several hours had already passed since the fire was lit under the Phalaris bowl. The presence and excited voices of the men outside were gone. Loma remained trapped inside a lump of burnt flesh that could hardly be called a woman. Her entire body was completely charred. Loma was breathing. No, she didn't have lungs or a beating heart anymore. However, her life unquestionably continued to exist. No normal person could remain alive. But she was a witch. Therefore, the miserable wretch still survived. Despite all the skin on her body and even her internal organs being charred away, despite every ounce of water necessary for survival being evaporated, despite even the inside of her skull drying out and her brain turning to ash, she began to think about why she still lived even after suffering all of that, almost as if carving her thoughts into her very bones. Loma's sense of time was paralyzed. How long had she spent trapped in that iron bowl? How many hours? Minutes? No, could it have only been a few moments? Her ashen flesh crumbled away into a pile of dust, exposing her bones. Her lungs, heart, guts, organs, and even her brain had turned to burnt ash, crackling as they fell away. She was no longer a living creature, only an inanimate object. Even so, Wilma still continued to question, why? Perhaps thinking meant she was still alive, that, or she was long dead, and only her mind or soul persisted in endless, perpetuous thought. Could witches still live even after being reduced to bones? Would that make them just human-shaped monsters? Why would such a thing exist in this world? Honestly, what on earth were witches? What was she? Loma's mind continued to wander that infinite labyrinth in a place where suffering couldn't follow. Did she have to meet such a gruesome fate because she was a witch? Did she have to deal with such unreasonable actions because she was a witch? What are witches? What are... what? Loma awoke, overcome by terror. Her circulatory system was running up rampant as she leapt up, gasping for air. A dream? But the experience was far too vivid to call it that. The pain of her skin charring to ash, the odor of her flesh burning white, the sound of the water in her bones evaporating as they cracked. She could remember them all in elaborate detail. She once read that dreams use memories as film to create a movie played back on the screen of one's subconscious. That the subconscious mind reacts to one's hopes, fears, obsessions, and heartbreaks to set up the movie in the brain. By that logic, the subject of the movie has to exist within oneself first. It's limited to what one's already seen, learned, or experienced. It's impossible for it to play back unknown footage. Once she reached that conclusion, a chill raced through Wilma as if her heart was stuffed with ice. Because that meant questioning if she experienced that frightening terror and suffering herself. The dream was vivid enough to easily affirm that. Her mind and body certainly recalled the full details of the pain, and the true taste of her despair. That conviction was slowly taking root in Wilma, becoming unshakable. That reality far surpassed the limits of her imagination. It wasn't something she could experience unless she went through it in real life. This is foolish. Still, her logic denied the voice of her body. She was afraid of acknowledging experiences she didn't remember. It gave her an unsettling chill, like falling right after slipping on stairs. It's because I heard about Allison. That has to be it. She intentionally spoke aloud to ease the anxiety brewing in her heart. However, recognizing her own thoughts was her lifeline, or perhaps it could also be called her obstinance. The person she recognizes herself was here, thinking and feeling. Even if all this was just a single night's dream playing in someone else's head. She lifted herself up from the bed, the odor of old wood wafting about her. The hour was still well before dawn. The night sky was dyed a deep shade of indigo outside her window. The wind blew in long gusts. The clouds were moving fast. She looked up at the moon, its light rapidly flickering, before she left her room. She headed to the entrance hall, planning to bask in the moonlight out in the large garden. However, she suddenly spotted Allison's small frame on the stairs before her. Oh, Wilma Oni-chan. Her skin crawled from the memory of her recent nightmare at the sight of that innocent smile. Keeping her own feelings hidden, Wilma pretended to act calm and smiled back. Children should be in bed at this hour, Allison. I couldn't sleep, so I was exploring. This house is really big. Allison smiled, her big eyes brimming with curiosity. I see. Did you have a scary dream? Wilma intentionally brought up the topic she wanted to avoid, subconsciously pursuing the thread of her nagging feeling. Like a dream of meeting a frightfully cruel fate long ago? Wilma asked, ruminating on the words as she stared at the small witch's features. The night air quietly grew tense. Her heart was filled with anxious fear and a contradictory yearning for the truth. The two conflicting feelings swirled like mad inside of her, but Allison quietly shook her head. I see. That's only natural if you don't remember. You should hurry off to sleep. Yeah, good night. Relief and strange disappointment. As Wilma passed Allison, she kept both of those emotions locked in her heart. Her own legs continued to carry her onward. But was she truly deciding her direction of her own free will? Was she really making progress towards somewhere else at all? Her desperate thoughts sent a chilling wave through her body. She felt like she sensed someone else's eyes on her and soon found herself turning around. Allison had long disappeared into the darkness. In the living room on the first floor of the Western Mansion, Tsunaga Shogo sat alone facing the... Tsunaga Shogo sat alone facing the rosewood table, blending in with the late night silence. His posture resembled that of a coiled jungle tiger, and he hadn't moved from his spot for over an hour. A notebook PC from the last generation was sitting on the table before him. The backlight of the LCD displayed a 3D rendering of an object drifted in CAD software. It was Kajo City's tallest high-rise apartment complex, presently known as Slumville. There were the blueprints for the building once called Northeast Grand Hills 7 years... Oh, these were the blueprints for the building once called Northeast Grand Hills 7 years ago. It was the date he requested from his outside collaborator, Igo Nobutake. He didn't know what measures that ex-police chief took to obtain it. However, with those in hand, he could get a detailed assessment of that huge building's infrastructure. After infiltrating the site, he had a lay of the land as well. A siege, huh? Tsunaga muttered, his mind already calculating the patterns of several simulations. Either way, it wouldn't change the fact that he was ultimately throwing himself at death. He never intended to return alive, though. The top floor was 50 stories off the ground. He didn't care if his trip to Shimon was a one-way ticket, but he absolutely refused to die in vain partway there. There would be no point if he did. He was determined to achieve his goal, even if it costed him everything. For Tsunaga, these past 2 years, the time he had to remain in obscurity and prepare his revolt, were devoted to settling the score for the hell that thoroughly destroyed his life. It was the only goal left in the life of the man known as Tsunaga Shogo. One could say it was his raison d'etre. Dark crimson stained memories flitted through his mind. His nose recalled the irritating smell of rusted iron. The flames of hatred singed the depths of his stomach. His detestable, bloody memory of the events here 7 years ago never once left the back of his eyelids, refusing to let Tsunaga slow his pace. As a survivor, he had only one prayer to offer those who face that gruesome death. That prayer needed neither scripture nor a mantra to sing. Only sinful lumps of lead on the back of flames were necessary. With the final battle drawing near, Tsunaga spread his weapons on the floor, carefully performing maintenance on each. The first he picked up was a Swiss Arms Sig Sauer P226. Its solid construction and great reliability made it the handgun Tsunaga was most familiar with. He diligently wiped away the lingering dregs of gunpowder, coating the muzzle and the ejection port using a dry towel soaked in gun oil. The cloth quickly stained black from the soot. The barrel was lined from the lingering gunpowder and the minute fragments of bullets shaved off during the discharge. For those, he used a solvent meant to melt lead and copper. Okay. He took care not to let any of the fluid seep into the chamber, running a cleaning rod through the muzzle. He ran the brush along each groove in the rifling. He also checked the side hammer and decocking lever used to set the hammer to half cock and other moving mechanical parts. He applied the right amount of grease to each as necessary. Finally, he wiped the excess off with a dry cloth. The 6 hour shone with a dull, glossless light in Sunaga's hands. He wielded the same handgun 7 years ago, but the man who held it now was a vastly different person. The power behind the 6 hour's trigger was once employed in the name of justice and ideals. The wielder's own prize and refusal to use it as a tool of murder gave this excellent gun something to shine for. He once had comrades who shared his ideals, strong, trustworthy men who challenged hardships with him, pure beliefs burning passionately in their chests. Sunaga once stood in that righteous light with those men at his back. Back then he could see it clearly, the golden brilliance of the shapeless soul that made men human. But now, Sunaga would never be able to find that light again. He could only crawl, groping around in the darkness like a maggot that lost its sight. Nothing was left to him now, not even the name of the bullets fired by that dark, cold muzzle. Only one thing remained, raw, nameless violence without a shred of ideals or pride. The man had been stripped of his ostentations, leaving only a force of malice and rage to wield a deadly iron weapon. That's fine. No, in truth, he longed for it. The righteous light that once supported him, the power of his pride and ideals, wasn't enough to shatter that hell. Sunaga casually plucked 9mm Parabellum cartridges out of a paper carton. The cylindrical brass bullets shimmered as they rolled in his fingers. He placed them one at a time into the bottom of a double-column magazine, loading it up while pressing back against the spring's resistance. Only that dull, dry sound rang out in the quiet night. There wasn't a trace of emotion on Sunaga's profile as he stared at his hands. There were some who might wail or condemn him for that ghastly appearance, but none remained. The comrades Sunaga once knew all died in that assault 7 years ago. Sunaga cast his gaze towards the dark window. He could see the night beyond it. In a distance, Earth's magnificent galaxy was shining away. Cantal's pandemonium, the tombstone for justice. Tonight, the lights of vice continue to shine, will-o'-the-wisp rising from the corpses of those trampled and killed. So long as that city prospered, the dead would never know rest. Not his dead comrades, nor the murdered girls. And to Sunaga, this was also a place of death and rebirth. This city gave birth to the hell that killed him as a man, but is also the place that gave him a new objective for his current life. In which case, I'll have to end it all here. Sunaga muttered, pointing the black muzzle towards his unseen target, a figment of Shimon. He pressed the loaded magazine into the grip. He pulled the slide, causing a stiff sound from inside, and loaded the first bullet into the chamber. He then lowered the decock hammer and placed the Sig Sauer on the table in front of him. After finishing his inspection of all his equipment, Sunaga pulled out his cell phone and dialed a number. The dial tone rang over and over while trying to reach Matsumaru Serika's number. The time shown on his wristwatch was over 40 minutes past their scheduled rendezvous. He sensed an ominous presence behind her delay. Suddenly, an alert sounded from the laptop speakers. Tension gripped Sunaga's entire body. Something had tripped one of the IR sensors placed in sections of the 200-meter radius forest surrounding the mansion. Someone was approaching the mansion. Serika already had a terminal to negate the sensor's reaction. Since the witches on his side came and went by air, they had no need for one. Which meant whoever was heading for the mansion was someone entirely different. The enemy holding control of Kantel's pneumonium was moving. Uncovering his hideout here, many could also assume they had an idea of which faces came and went from this place. Serika had gone silent, too. It was hard to think of both as coincidences. It was highly likely that girl had already fallen into the enemy's hands. Still, the relationship was forged with this risk understood up front. Either way, he needed to prioritize eliminating the threats closing in on him over the safety of his comrades. Sunaga's sturdy body, nearing 100K, rose gracefully from his chair without a sound. The mountain range stretching north of Kantel's pandemonium. Several pairs of hiking boots passed through its thick grooves, rustling the undergrowth as they advanced. The group of men numbered around 10, with one man taking the lead. Every one of them carried powerful automatic rifles and sidearm handguns. 5 Asians, 3 Caucasians, 1 African, and 1 Arab. The armed foreigners carried a taciturn air and professional manner that set them apart from the thugs in the street. Each one was a former soldier or professional criminal with battlefield experience. Many of them carried Colt M4 carbines as their assault rifle. but some used Russian Kalashnikovs, the AK-47, and others had customized theirs with grenades on the rails under the gun barrel. One of the Caucasians focused on cover fire, carrying an LMG over 10 kilos in weight. Soon after, the grove of trees grew sparser and their vision cleared up, a man walking in front signaled everyone to stop with a hand sign. All 10 men stopped their advance immediately. On the other side of the grove was an open plain about 50 meters across. Beyond it lay the brick walls of the mansion they targeted. Still, the lead man paused there, staring through the deep green darkness of the mansion, his faded sandy blonde hair blue in the midnight breeze. Brian McComhall, the man who should have died in the explosion during his fight with Suniga, was still here, alive and well. There weren't even slight traces of burns on his Reaper's visage. What's wrong? It's unguarded. Aren't we going in? Another man voices frustration at the one motionlessly watching the mansion. Wait, there's a foul air about. Brian's eyes narrowed and grew hazy as he recalled something. I can't explain it in words, but at times like this, I've generally been dealt a bad hand. Let's wait for the witches to join us. The man who asked him scoffed at these indifferent orders and returned a contemptuous smile. Hey, give us a break, Brian. You're gonna hide under the skirts of those bitches after we came this far? His attitude quickly spread through the whole team. The eyes that had wandered over Brian appraisingly before now warped with clear suspicion. In a workplace where death lingered around every corner, an incompetent commander was an evil that threatened one's own life. The more experienced a soldier was, the more sensitive their noses were to such things. It didn't help Brian that his history brought objection from even the lowest of scum. We can't rely on witches to provide cover. They just run rampant as they please. Hard to imagine their minds can even understand tactics. The slightly dark-skinned Chinese man spoke calmly. Several others agreed, as evident by their expressions or attitudes. The reaction was one Brian could generally agree with, as the name suggested the disastrous witches were on par with natural disasters. No military ever built their strategy around using a tornado or an earthquake. At the same time, that mentality also applied to the witches fighting alongside their opponent. If those whimsical alley cats were out of the way, the only target they need to eliminate would be the man Suniga. Their job ought to be handled quickly and finished before they could even speak. At present, despite being informed of the operation, Sandy and Isabel couldn't bring themselves to be there alongside the troops. Brian understood they couldn't be relied upon, so his intention was to at least use them as a meat shield. Traitors are always like that. They turn cowardly at the very end and fucking run to save their hides. They ain't men, frankly. A red-faced Caucasian spat. His piercing eyes glared at Brian. I know what you did back home in Ireland. You sold out your countrymen and survived all by yourself. The atmosphere between them was tense. No matter how callous and moral standardless the criminal, betrayal was held as the most despicable, vile act. For that reason, traitors and snitches were given the worst treatment among the lawless. Everyone under Brian had already shared those rumors. The rift in trust between them would prove decisive here. We're going in. Yen, Yakulov, Mar, swing around back. O'Donnell, Ali, I'm backup. The rest of you are storming in the front with me. We commence our charge once the other three are in position. Got it? The second in command started taking charge. No one voiced objection to his orders. The 10 men all ignored Brian and started moving into their individual positions. Brian silently watched over them from behind. His gaze brimmed with pity as he watched the men's backs. Do as you like. I won't stop those rushing to die. He muttered with cynicism, just as a thunder shook the deep forest and rent the darkness. It wasn't the roar of lightning. The heavy sound ringing out was a huge crack of gunfire. One of the men, trying to circle around the back, was severed from the waist up in an instant. The lower half of his body and its steaming entrails and spine took a few steps before collapsing into the grass. The roar of gunfire continued. Another man nearby was split in half and sent flying several meters away. The injured corpse looked like it had been wounded by a grizzly bear's forepaws that rolled through the grass. He was sniped by a large caliber rifle. The mansion's owner had already predicted the approach of intruders and was waiting in perfect position within the darkness, his sights set on them. When the team showed themselves on an open field, they became perfect targets. The remaining man on the separate team was terrified by his partner's demise, and he turned tail and ran back into the woods. Another gunshot roared, and a huge cavity opened in his back. The bullet hitting him was so powerful that a shockwave of impact liquefied the surrounding flesh, sending it flying. The remaining men headed for the front, dispersed, trying to escape the devil's line of fire. Another was sent flying back as he was shot from the side. His final moments were like a man getting run over by a truck racing at rampant speeds. It was hard to believe the sniper was so precise this late at night. Even as chills raced up their spines from his merciless, accurate sights, the remaining six moved nimbly, keeping themselves behind cover. In a room on the second floor of the mansion, the long body of a dental NTW poked out an open window. Tsunaga was in sniping position at a higher level. He wore night vision goggles to create an image of space under the stars, and he fired the moment he took aim. He locked joints and bones, along with his honed muscles, withstood the powerful recoil, turning another intruder from the force into a lump of flesh. He drew back the iron bolt, operating the internal mechanisms with a ruthless mechanical sound. The huge cartridge from the heated 20mm autocannon shell spun as it was ejected and fell to the floor. He then set his sights on a new target, fired the reloaded bullet. The hydraulic suspension built into the shock-absorbing stock creaked. When a normal human body takes a direct hit from an anti-material rifle, it suffers tremendous damage. The caliber wasn't designed to be fired on humans in the first place. Still, not a shred of mercy or hesitation existed in Tsunaga's actions. He mechanically set his crosshairs on a target and squeezed the trigger with malice. Four was shot dead at his hands. The gun's magazine was empty and steam rose from the hot barrel. The remaining six fanned out while he reloaded, finding cover in places like the trees that are in the front garden and the mansion's fence. Their movement was quick, like only well-trained soldiers could manage. Once the enemy got that close, he lost his advantage as a sniper. Two guns fought back by laying down a hail of fire on the second floor window from different spots in the front garden. Pieces of the wooden window frame were blown away and the glass was shattered. The man with a grenade launcher equipped to his barrel pointed its muzzle towards the second floor. Tsunaga abandoned the dental without hesitation, making a hasty retreat through the room and out into the hall. Immediately after, the grenade landed with a white trail of smoke. The room and walls were eradicated by the explosion. Charred fragments scattered back into the hall as well. The smell of flames tickled Tsunaga's nostrils. Go, Carol. However, Carol and Wilma lay in ambush inside the mansion. Both witches leapt down from the roof, attacking like hunting dogs and targeting the men hugging the building. The mercenaries were cut down one after another as the two witches surprised them from above with their blades. The men had never imagined that witches could follow such unified tactics. Still, they attempted to counterattack with their grenades and M60 assault rifles. The guard was covered in orange bursts. Naturally, though, their weapons didn't work, only accelerating their despair. Screams, wails, death knells, and silent ends. The massacre proceeded with lightning efficiency. In under 10 seconds, four men were converted to mass-produced corpses. The two survivors desperately kicked in the mansion door and stormed inside, but Tsunaga was waiting for them, looking down on the first floor hall from the top of the stairs. As soon as the two men burst in, his right hand casually fired his Franchi's shotgun. The 12-gauge 00 buckshot split in 18 pellets, assaulting the men with a squall of lead. It ripped through one's torso like a bamboo screen, and he fell to the floor, firing his automatic rifles in random directions. He was dead instantly. The remaining man was left wounded from the scatter shot, but he held on and tried to fire back. The Kalashnikov in his hands howled with piercing rage on his behalf. However, between his wounds and the quick wits of his target, his high-velocity bullets ended up only shattering furniture and drilling holes into the walls. Tsunaga had rolled over the stair railing, pulling his trigger the moment he landed. After a direct hit from all nine balls in the shot, the man was reduced to an unrecognizable mass of red mincemeat. His body collapsed, curling up in an odd position on an antique chair. Still, the man continued to draw breath, so Tsunaga dealt the merciless finishing blow directly. As the last man expired, silence returned to the mansion. Brian watched from deep in the forest as the 10 mercenaries accompanying him were slaughtered. Guess they didn't make it in time, inconsiderate witches. Sandy and Isabel, the witches supposed to be on his side, still hadn't reached the site. He wanted to leave the two opposing witches in their hands. Looks like we're taking a rain check tonight, Avenger. I'll be back to collect. He muttered with disappointment, turning his back on the mansion of slaughter. His only target was that man, Tsunaga Shogo. Brian McComal retreated into the moonlight woods, his heart dancing with anticipation as he dreamed of continuing that night's honeymoon. Interlude, where water comes together with other water. 2 months ago. The ends of the world. Words spill from my lips. Yet what color are these lips weaving words? What color is my hair, as if it's teased by the raging winds? What color are these eyes viewing the scenery? I still don't know myself. Or so I felt without knowing who I am. No, what I am. While even the meaning of truth was unclear to me, I perceived that as truth. That this place truly is the ends of the world. Before my eyes there's a giant hole boring into the cloudy sky, and behind me rests a filthy, worn-down barricade. For some reason, I felt like I couldn't pass beyond that barricade. Vaguely, I realized that wasn't a problem of physical ability. A jolting, instinctual sense of danger stabbing at my neck made me aware of that before I could touch the transparent cage past the barricade. Still, fear drives me to step back despite it, fear of that city directly below the abyssal hole in the sky. One step, two steps, three steps, my heel touches something, my back, my palms, and the back of my head touch it, and presses back with intangible resistance like water. I knew I couldn't back away any further. Without turning around, I realized I could never achieve escape from here. I don't want to go, but I have to go. I'm confused by those two conflicting emotions rising within me. Both deep and strong, all while still unsure of who I am. I don't want to go. Terrifying fate awaits me in that land. That's more conviction than premonition. Yet at the same time, a strong emotion surpassing that conviction exists deep within my heart. Something warm, something cold, something hard, something soft, or perhaps fragile, strong, sorrowful, and dear. Something with all of those conflicting elements. I understand that sentiment. It's the core of my very being. I have no foundational memories. I don't even know my own form. I don't possess the words to express my own mysterious state of existence. Yet, within that blank verge of myself, one precious thing remains, that emotion. So I must go. I knew it. If I follow this core deep within my heart, then I must go to that city over there. But I don't know who or what is waiting for me there. I'll bet everything on this fiery emotion, though. I'm positive that's my one reason for existing, my reason for manifesting here. Now, everyone is here. I've waited a long 7 years for you, you know, my final, beloved little sister. Now my wish will be fulfilled. How will you live your life in the sealed cycle of destiny, I wonder? There was a wet squelch. Rotten flesh was crushed under a thick sole. No one could tell whether it was the corpse of a dead rat or a chunk of bearded cheek scattered during the city battles. The idea of the meat crushed under a shoe meant nothing to the people nearby, nor the one who crushed it. Its mind was freshly born into a slender body clothed in black, still wandering between innocence and ignorance. It took the shape of a young woman walking towards the center of the city from the outskirts. She came born with the knowledge of how to manipulate gravity so she could fly, just as she was born knowing how to walk. However, she didn't need that speed right now. She walked slowly on her legs, trying to first take in this world on a personal scale. She strode past a firefight in a ruined block, listened to the screams of a woman being raped by men in an abandoned building, passed right beside an old lady dying in a back alley, and before she knew it, she was standing in the business district glowing with richly colored neon lights. A scream rose several meters ahead in the street. She thought she could see a figure being attacked by a group of people in the venomous lights of downtown. Blood flowed across the asphalt, soaking her feet. She didn't even raise an eyebrow. No matter how much tragedy and villainy she witnessed, her cold phosphorescent eyes merely served as lenses reflecting the state of the world. She felt no fear, no joy. Her heart didn't react at all. She only felt a slight sense of danger from her instincts as a woman. She thought she might be too vulnerable in this city filled with violence, considering her youthful appearance. Her pomegranate eyes wandered. She caught numerous villainous gazes from the dark alleys and shadows around her. Their desires were easily sensed, but surprisingly none showed signs of assailing her. Her vague question was quelled by an odd old man, carefully approaching her from a distance. He was a vagrant covered in dandruff, grease, and dirt, carrying several large sacks. The old man gave her a courteous smile and asked her name. Only then did she realize she didn't have one. I don't know, she answered with a confused look. The old man explained that she was one of the beings known as Disastrous Witches. He also told her how every one of Disastrous Witches had an individual name, taken from the female name shared by a natural disaster, namely a historic hurricane. She was a new type of Disastrous Witch, apparently. Upon discovering that, the old man grew excited. If you don't have a name, I'll give you one. The old man began speaking about how this day was Christmas, and about how long ago there was a god killed for the benefit of all, and today was the day his birth was celebrated. Part of that celebration was singing carols. Carol was also a name used once for a hurricane. With that in mind, he told her to call herself Carol, the witch, from today onward. Even though she didn't need one, the old man still spoke to her. She didn't care about a name, but she vaguely began to think it might be inconvenient without one. And just then, a shockwave plummeting from the starry sky suddenly impacted the area. The shockwave came at supersonic speeds, turning the buildings, cars, and even passerbys into dust. She was the only one who managed to evade at the last second. The old man died instantly. Human limbs and organs were scattered over a dozen meter radius. Cars had flipped over, signs were blown off, and fires had even erupted. It was a black and red depiction of hell, swirling with screams and groans. A lone figure quietly stood at the center, a strong tattooed woman with a ferocious smile. Her huge body bore muscles larger than those of a well-trained man's. She hardly looked like a fellow woman. I'm Sandy. That's what people call me, and that's what I go by. This woman wasn't either. She was a fellow witch. She had cold-looking skin and glowing gemstone eyes. The girl recently named Carol paid close attention to the actions of Sandy, the first of her kind she'd ever met. So the final missing piece makes her late appearance. Just as they said, this one's a new face. She didn't know who they referred to. Carol just focused on listening to Sandy. Welcome, my 26th sister. You're the youngest of us all, but I'll teach you. Teach you what fate awaits witches. The woman roared deeply, her amber glow vanishing from sight. A shock pierced through her body. Then she felt her body grow lighter from the knees down. The intense sense of pain came last. By the time she realized that her one-sided violation was over, her severed legs splayed in different directions, leaving fresh trails of blood. While it's true she'd been completely caught off guard, Sandy's attack was executed with such speed that it made reaction impossible. Carol was nothing but a powerless target before her. Carol rolled through the street in shock. The blood spewing from her legs wouldn't stop. Her mind could only question why. She didn't understand why she was being attacked. She had no memory, so there was no pretext that could come to mind. Why? She managed to voice her question. Sandy gave her a predatory smile after hearing that flat, emotionless question. Her hands were suddenly holding a pair of cold, glowing swords. Their cruel blades were dyed with fresh blood from Carol's severed legs. Why? Well, why indeed? However, Sandy didn't use her iron blades. She kicked Carol, tormenting her. She threw her weight into the blow, digging the toes of her foot into Carol's side. The shock coursed through her organs and jarred her spine. Carol vomited, rolling across the solid concrete. Tell me, do you know why you were born? Do you think the answer to that question is waiting for you? Another kick mercilessly connected with her face. Blood from her nose and broken teeth scattered, but Carol could only continue rolling on the street. Sandy mercilessly kicked her slender body through the streets, cackling the whole time before reaching out her hand. There you go! Up! Up! She wrapped her steely arms around Carol's thin neck and lifted her up high. She was a human gallows. Carol's tibia scraped against the ground, both ends of her legs lifting completely off the... Both ends of her legs lifting completely off the surface. Her entire weight rested on her tibia, and Sandy dug her fingers into Carol's neck. The pressure against her windpipe physically blocked her breathing, and her mind started to fade from lack of oxygen. Carol gasped for air under Sandy's joyful gaze. If you think someone's gonna explain everything you don't know, you're sorely mistaken. Her vision suddenly contorted with hatred and aggravation. That ain't the way this world works. If you don't understand something, then you have to struggle without that knowledge. Sucks, don't it? But you've still been born into this world. Carol could only squirm pathetically, unable to run or fight back. Sandy let out a cruel scoff as she watched. My neck's breaking. Her vertebrae cracked. She might suffocate first. Carol's control weakened, spraying piss on the ground. Afraid of dying? It's even worse when you can't die, though. Sandy's glowing amber eyes peered into hers ominously. The source of a witch's power is blood. When you lose a lot of it like this, you become an ordinary human. That's why our weapons are specialized in shedding an opponent's blood like this. These things are masses of blood too, so breaking them first is an option. Talk about completely illogical, huh? The weapon that's supposed to help you be invincible can also be fatal, forcing you to lose everything at once. Sandy enjoyed watching Carol suffer and froth at the mouth as she spat out her lesson. It doesn't matter if your neck's broken, or your whole body's diced into pieces, though. Unless someone severs your head, you aren't allowed to die. Cruel, ain't it? You don't have to say anything, I agree. The same thing goes for me, after all. Carol didn't have the means to answer anymore. Knowing that, Sandy still continued tormenting her. Now, I guess that does it for our first greeting. She loosened her grip on Carol's neck. Her suffocation eased up, though only slightly. Well, you should die once for starters. Let's meet again after that. With those puzzling last words, she offhandedly cast Carol's body aside onto the road. Sandy's figure gradually grew hazy in her vision. It wasn't a delusion. Sandy actually turned her back and walked away, leaving her there, motionless. Why? She couldn't help but ask that same question again. Why did Sandy hurt her so much and leave her immobile if she wasn't planning to deliver the lethal blow herself? Why would Sandy tell her to die once, too? That conflicted with her offer to meet again. However, she couldn't get the questions out of her mouth. There was too much blood filling her throat. In the end, the question was answered not by Sandy, who abandoned her, but by the sound of approaching exhaust. The sound of approaching exhaust instead. A single truck stopped by her fallen body, lying face up. She felt someone reaching out and picking her up, despite her intense pain. The foul odor of blood and organs tickled her nose from within the open doors of the cargo hatch. The smell almost violently crushed her mind. She was grabbed by her hair and carried to the truck, several stumps dragging beneath her. One could say she was being handled worse than cattle in a slaughterhouse. The darkness of the cargo hatch drew close. All she could sense within was cruel malice and harm. She thought she was going to die without ever understanding anything. Without understanding anything about the strong, passionate feelings within her heart. She heard a loud sound. It took a short while to realize that sound was her body hitting the ground once more. Her senses were already so dulled and vague she couldn't feel the shock. There was something huge and agile, like a tiger or a large wolf drenched in bloodlust. It moved like a shadow of death crossing her hazy vision. Men poured out of the truck, spouting fountains of blood one after another as they fell. The last remaining man's legs were shot off before being seized and dragged by his collar. It was only a slight coincidence that her eyes met with the person carrying the last surviving man. Even now, she still felt that way. She was a lump of flesh splayed out near the truck, and once he realized she was still alive, his eyebrows narrowed in displeasure. She felt herself being alienated and detested. However, she realized his hatred wasn't being directed solely towards her. It was a mysterious conviction. She thought this man hated the entire world surrounding her. He only hesitated for a moment before making his decision. Once he pressed the surviving man into the back seat, he grabbed her blood-soaked ribbon and threw it into the passenger seat as well. The old peeling van drove off with her, the man, and one more. She continued to bleed until she finally passed out. When she next awoke, everything was over. The kidnapped survivor was killed after extracting information from him. There was no hesitation in his execution. Her turn was next. Her severed limbs and wounds had started showing signs of recovery somehow, but she lost a lot of blood. Her body was still too weak. Her fuzzy mind and vision looked up at the person before her. The man remained standing, his eyes too dark, yet strangely clear. He wasn't frightening. For some reason, she thought his eyes were deeply dark, like eyes that returned from witnessing something bad. The man introduced himself as Tsunaga Shogo. Did you save me? While pursuing my objective, his reply came coldly. Objective? The man, Tsunaga, spent several months giving Kirill an appraising stare before he spoke in a controlled tone. They both met for the first time in that city, the criminal paradise known as Pandemonium. His objective was to crush the plot of whoever was using that lawless area as a cover for their activities. He also told her about the existence of witches allied to his enemy that obstructed his goals. One of which was Sandy, the one who assaulted her. Apparently she wasn't on her own. It's impossible to do something about that without another witch. You were attacked by that tattooed witch. Does that mean you're their enemy? Kirill struggled to answer this sudden question. She didn't have enemies or allies. It was unclear where she stood, like she'd just been born. You're not? Kirill shook her head. Then she turned to Tsunaga. But I want to help you, she proclaimed. I'm a witch too. I should be useful to you. Anyone listening would have found her statement sudden, but her feelings were welling up naturally from deep within herself. She didn't know why. The choice just felt natural. Her heart and emotions were like something with uncertain outlines, hard to grasp. However, they felt very familiar. Can you kill your fellow witches for me? I can. She answered immediately. She felt more happiness than doubt in her lack of hesitation. She could live as these feelings directed her. She even felt her anxiety fading at that thought. If she were forced to choose a reason, it was probably because a fellow witch nearly killed her, which meant witches weren't her allies. The man who saved her was. She found that logic shaky herself, but she decided to follow it for now. Tsunaga thought over Carol's answer silently. He stared at Carol's face. His own expression remained unchanged as the dark eyes reflected everything, praising her. Kirill followed up, urging his decision. I've already learned how to kill witches. That was something Sandy had taught her firsthand. She wove those words without any resistance. She felt like being useful to this man was the most natural state for herself. Tsunaga's eyes studied her. Neither hostility nor doubt dwelt in his gaze. His eyes weren't looking at a human. They were extremely cold, analytical, and observant, like the eyes of someone assessing a machine or weapon's performance. Very well. The negotiation was a success. However, you would be my tool, my weapon. If I determine I can't use you, I'll cast you aside on the spot. That's fine. She nodded. A slight sense of excitement rose in her chest alongside bewilderment and joy. She was his tool. That recognition filled the void she felt. It felt like it filled her completely. That was how Carol came to act alongside Tsunaga, all while gaining the individual bits of knowledge she needed as a witch. For example, the fact she didn't need to eat food normally, there was a more effective means that served as a substitute. However, Tsunaga continued to feed Carol like a human instead of providing the substitute, but that practice had to come to an end after a particular series of events. As a band of armed robbers stationed on the outskirts of the city preying on travelers and the flow of goods and pandemonium from outside, Tsunaga designated the band as their living target for combat practice to help hone their coordination. Eventually, the armed robbers started hiring a witch as their bodyguard to help them resist. Okay. The hired witch, Edna, was satisfied as long as she had a reason to fight. She used a sword and shield along with her own formidable combination of offensive and defensive tactics to deliver mortal wounds to the untrained Carol in a tough fight. Tsunaga managed to send the band packing, allowing them to avoid a fatal blow. Edna had no reason to continue fighting once her employers ran. She vowed to fight Carol again and departed in good sport. The wounds Carol suffered in her fight with Edna were deep, and her regeneration was advancing slowly. That was because she hadn't taken the source of magic power supporting a mysterious supernatural condition, human semen, after losing massive amounts of blood. It was a problem they wouldn't have faced if she hadn't been wounded so deeply. Tsunaga already knew that a witch's sustenance is part of his preliminary research on this city. He also made a point not to supply that when it wasn't necessary. However, once he made his decision, Tsunaga didn't hesitate. He led Carol by the hand to his bedroom. Strip, I'll give you semen. He made his proclamation to her in a robotic tone without a shred of desire. And here we go, folks. Yep, this is where I'm gonna end it today. So, if you want more maggot baits, just go ahead and request more maggot baits. And more will come. Because, you know, I'm not finished with it yet, and we're basically reading it together. We're still not actually at the part where I last left off in my original run, but we're getting closer. So we're almost getting to a part where I don't even know what's going on. I will let you know exactly where that part is, but we're not there yet. At any rate, guys, this is the Grim Lord, and I am out of here, and I'll see you next time on Grim Sentai Corner.